correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d20radio.com.
Welcome to Me and Steve Talk RPGs, a podcast where me and my friend Steve try and help you get the most out of your role-playing game experience.
Welcome back to Me and Steve Talk RPGs. I'm here with my friend Steve.
Hello, Steve.
And we're going to talk some RPGs, but before we get into that, let's talk some RPG conventions.
Yes. So, first off, because we're part of the D20 Radio Network, and they put this on every year, let's
and
talk a little.
Giving us tickets to be there and allowing us to play games free.
Let's talk about Gamer Nation Con. It's in Dallas, Texas, actually Plano, Texas, which is, you know, it's still Dallas. It's just
outside of Dallas.
Yeah, but it's a great little convention at a place called Dallas Games Marathon, and they're nice enough to let us use their massive collection of board games the whole time.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, obviously a bunch of people from the D20 Radio Network there, us, GM Chris, GM Dave, GM Phil.
Yeah, most of the Eberron Renewed crew is probably going to be there. Like, yeah. A lot of Studio 404 is going to be there. Like
JT,
you know, Keith Capel, right?
Like, yeah, Keith Capel said he's going to be there again.
Right. So it's, you know, if you're in or around the Genesis and like D20 Radio Network fans, that's the con to go to because that's where the everybody is.
Yep. It's great, great, great time. I'll throw a link in the show notes to the tabletop.events thing where you can still buy badges, and maybe also to the Kickstarter, which even though it's wrapped up, you can still get some information off of that page. Yeah, we'll both be running games, playing games.
All of the above, hanging out.
Yes. Yes, so yeah, check that out. And you were starting to say something.
No, I mentioned that we have some good news about.
Yes.
So if you follow the Pittsburgh Gaming Expo, which we go to typically every October, well, starting the year before last, it had sort of had a little bit of rockiness because they had kind of lost their venue for a minute. The good news is that they have their old venue back and there is no more rockiness. It is going to be, again, at the Monroeville Convention Center, October 4th through the 6th. We will be there. I will be there this time. I am going to lock myself in a room away from people and not catch the disease so I can end this year.
Yeah, they're expanding to Friday as well as Saturday and Sunday this year.
Right, right. And it's going to be a fantastic time. It always is. You know, last year I heard that they really expanded their gaming, especially tabletop, and then always have the coolest bands, the most awesome arcade stuff. I love that convention. And, you know, they don't do anything other than, boost us and give us a ticket. But I'll shout them out every day of the week because...
Oh, yeah.
The convention runners are awesome people. That's a great show to attend. If you're in or around the Pittsburgh area, that's definitely the one to look for.
Yeah, you know, they keep it accessible for families, and it's just a look, I'll call it a nerd fest. It really is. And I mean that in the most loving way possible.
It's everybody. It's you know, if you're into role-playing games, if you're into video games, if you're into board games, if you're into... just generally awesome music, there, you know, retro everything. I love that convention so much.
It's toys and games and cosplay and
They have a growing video, cosplay
arcade. You know, it's just great.
Yeah, it's just one of the best. Like, I don't know, I haven't been to many gaming conventions, but man, I really love me some PGX. Like.
It's small enough that it doesn't, you know, it's not massive, but
yeah, you're not tripping
big
on
enough
people.
That it's not just a few people. Like I forget, but you know, they took up the whole convention center last year.
Yeah, and you said it didn't feel like empty in any way. It was like decently busy, but not super congested.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and you know, well, look, I mean, they got enough attendance. They booked 3 days this year. So
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. Is that they booked 3 days this year, and yeah, I'm so excited for that.
Mm-hmm.
So excited I am as well. For October. With all that, let's get into some action and intrigue.
Yes, action and intrigue. So instead of a one-word theme this week, we're going to use two words. Because I feel like...
We're just going to... This whole year, we're going to build up until we have a complete sentence.
So, but... They also
keep adding words.
They're like the two building blocks for a good game.
Well, they're also two building blocks that work on their own as well.
Yes. Like, they can intertwine, but... I feel like if you don't have one or the other,
yeah, you don't have much of a story.
Probably not. Yeah, you're not going to have much of a story. You're not going to have much of a game, I don't think. I mean, unless the game is world building, like I suppose Microscope doesn't have.
Right, but there's intrigue in the creation of that world.
Fair.
Because you're intrigued to see what happens next. You want to know what the next piece is going to fit. I think if you either don't have action or intrigue, you don't actually have a story. Because even in stories where it's... So just speaking on intrigue, even in stories where it's narrative and character driven, what's keeping the other players involved and engaged is the interaction between those characters and how intriguing that is. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have good interaction between those characters, the players at the table lose interest.
Mm-hmm. And I think you need an element of both, because if you have all action and no intrigue or little intrigue, you have the movie Speed.
Oh, I love Speed, though. Speed's not a good time. And
it is a
Speed...
good time, except it should have ended about five times before it did.
Well,
where it felt like it was going to, in a way. Yeah.
But like,
what was the Jason Statham one where he's something he has to keep his heart rate up?
Oh, Crank. I just watched that movie the other day.
I haven't actually watched it.
So for context, because not everyone is as like, I realize I'm getting old and I realize that you're older than I am. Not everyone is at our speed as far as age wise. So there was a period in like the mid 2000s where Jason Statham movies came out, I swear, every weekend. I think he was in a movie every weekend. Yeah. And so you had all of these super serious Jason Statham movies like The Transporter or I can't even think of any of the other ones, but there was a million of them. And then Crank comes out and it is this ridiculous, ridiculous story about this guy who gets like a faulty pacemaker installed because the mob wants him to do a job for them, and if he doesn't do the job for them, they'll shut this pacemaker off. And so they do at one point, and instead of him like having it shut off, he's holding on to like jumper cables and like attaching them. It's wild. It's a freaking amazing, ridiculous movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a trip. And I watched it the other day because I was like, oh man, what is that Jason Statham movie where he's always like attaching electrical cables to himself? And I was like, oh yeah. And it's shot and edited at the pace at which, like, I've never done cocaine, but I imagine someone who has would shoot and edit a movie at that speed.
Well, but I think in the context of a game, so it's kind of like music, right?
Right.
You have to have contrast for intensity to have, or for some forms of intensity to have meaning.
Some forms, yes.
You know, yes. Like I'll pick on a band that is very much revered, but I'm not a big fan of. That being Slayer.
Mm.
Slayer, for the most part, is just fast and intense.
Well, yeah.
That is what they are. I'm not a big fan of them. I respect their place in the history of thrash metal, etc. But I would much rather listen to something with some breaks, some riff, where there's a tempo there, not just a endless barrage.
Yeah, Slayer is an attack on the senses in a lot of ways, and I feel like they intend that to be that.
Oh, that's their brand. Like I said, I'm not saying this necessarily to say that they're bad, just I think that's why I don't particularly enjoy them.
No, I get that. I'm not the hugest, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh man, Slayer is amazing. I'm not the hugest Slayer fan either. They're a little too heavy for my taste. But that being said, I understand their appeal and I understand their draw. And the same can be said for, like, you know, we've talked about games that aren't our speed. I feel that same exact feeling the way I feel about Slayer. Hey, that's cool, but that's not my pace. However, I don't know. I really think that you're right. And at the same time, I'm trying to draw examples of fun times I've had where the only draw to the situation was the action happening. And the only thing I can think of is a lot of the times playing Cyberpunk 2020, and not a jab at you in any way, but that game, even having other people run it, that game's fun comes from how fast, dirty, and mean the combat is. Mm-hmm. And how, like, yeah, the story around the combat is a great indicator of how fun that game can be, but getting to the root of the combat and getting just either murderating something or getting murderated is the best part.
Fair. I think, you know, now that you say it that way, Cyborg is a bit that way too. It's intended to be played on 11.
Cyborg. Yeah. They're both meant to be this just intense, action-packed adventures of ridiculousness where every roll you make is the difference between life and death, right? Like,
yeah,
in a way.
But I think still you have the, what do you want to say, the segment where the drums come in with those games. You know what I'm saying? Like, it stays very intense, but there is some ebb and flow, I think.
Right. No, I can agree with that. And I don't disagree with you. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with having the ebb and flow. But yeah, I'm just, like I said, I was just trying to draw to mind. And you're right. Those are the examples of like games where it's just all focused action. And then you get into some of that later, but that's not the initial draw or the initial point. I think the difference between games that, so it's sort of all flash and no burn, or all burn and no flash, right? You either get all action, which is just a pop, flash, firework type thing, mm-hmm. versus all intrigue, which is the opposite. The all intrigue would be, boy, it's having an all intrigue situation would be like the beginning to a really slow horror movie or a really slow, like, John Carpenter film, where the beginning is just a burn. You're just like, can we get to the point? I appreciate spending time in this world and I appreciate the intrigue that you're building, but can we get to a point? And so you're looking for that, like, you're watching that fuse burn and you're looking for the firework at the end, which is the, you know, in a lot of ways, some pieces are action set pieces. And so I think that's where putting the two together makes the whole package. You take the intrigue, you keep your players invested, even when there's nothing happening that they're actively involved in, you have them invested. And then when the action comes along and it's time to pay that off, they're actively involved and the investment makes that explosion even bigger.
Right. Well, I think what I'm thinking, and maybe I can articulate it here, is I think your action does need to ebb and flow.
Well, yes.
You need to use the intrigue to kind of bridge that, because intrigue can just keep building. Now, you do have to pay things off.
I mean,
you know, you do have to resolve things, but look how many times in a movie or a book where you've seen or you've read something where they answer one question, but it leaves you with three more.
You kind of have to answer questions. Unless you choose to do a story that just refuses to answer any questions. But yeah, no, I completely agree with you of how many times have you heard a story that's like, oh, well, this is, you know, this is this, that, or the other thing. And then you get the answer you want, but it opens up a few more loose ends. And that's the hook. That's the draw. That's the, we're going to open up these loose ends in the hopes that you grab onto them and hold on to them and then hopefully get your answer. And if you get your answer, that's great. But those loose ends are what's pulling you to the next part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is something that, that is something that's very important when it comes to narrative progression. And when it comes to good storytelling, you know, we often talk about like the three act structure, the beginning, middle, and end. That middle bit is just as important as the beginning or the end. Even though your players may not remember all of the middle bit, them having that explanation to draw them to the next thing is important, is narratively one of the most important things you can have. Because if they have a narrative disconnection between the beginning and the end, that's not a story. It's not a, it's a hollow, pointless act in storytelling, essentially.
Well, but I think that's where, and I'm going to make a weird parallel here, and feel free to tell me if I'm completely off my rockers and off base here. But if you look at Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings trilogy, first movie, The Fellowship of the Ring, sets everything up. The Two Towers, I thought, was the weakest of the three films. But it's necessary to get from Fellowship of the Ring to Return of the King. And I thought, in terms of a lot of the visual effects, like not just the sets, but like, you know, some of the stuff that they did, and not really special effects, but some of the image generation and whatnot, I guess is what I'm trying to say, which technically classifies as special effects. That was maybe the strongest in that middle film, which I think he did on purpose, because, and this is going to sound like I'm complaining about the story, and I'm not, but it's almost like that's the weakest segment of the story, so we beef it up and make it look exciting. Am I making sense?
I guess. Yeah, you are. I think it's you're onto a point with it being the weakest part of the story, but it's the weakest part of the story visually. In the book, that middle is so intriguing because you're reading it.
Right.
It's not right. Being visually represented to you. And that's why it's the weakest part in the film. But he makes up for it by building these gorgeous set pieces of New Zealand.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, I'm not dissing the film in any way. And you have to have it there because it's the narrative bridge. You know, and important stuff does happen, but it felt like there was more candy than substance in the film.
See, okay, so I'm going to draw a comparison that's going to make our audience kind of upset with me, but I don't care. It reminds me of the prequel trilogy of Star Wars, right?
Okay.
I know you're not the biggest fan of Episode One. I get that.
Episode One I kind of enjoyed.
Okay. I like Episode One and I like Episode Three. Episode Two, I absolutely despised as a kid. I still kind of hate it.
See, but I was very unsatisfied with Episode Three, but that's me.
Episode three, okay.
But continue with your point.
Okay, my point is it's the same basic idea. Episode One sets up this grand adventure where we're going to learn about Anakin and Obi-Wan and what's going on with the Senate, what's going on with the droids and the, you know, the clones and everything. We're setting all that up in Episode One, plus the story of Anakin growing and coming of age. Then Episode Two is spent with Anakin and Padme being in love for 2 hours. And yeah, it builds a little bit more on that, like, intrigue around the Senate, around the world, around what's going on politically. But it's, I think the weakest parts of that movie is Anakin and Padme, because I really just don't need that. And then Episode Three is this payoff. It's the final culmination of, okay, we've watched Anakin sort of essentially lose his religion, lose his faith, get corrupted. And then we've also watched, you know, we've watched them become like by the time episode 3 comes around and their relationship, and you're like, okay, so they're like past this honeymoon phase and he's just wanting to tell somebody that, hey, me and Padme are happy. Can you please just let me be happy and be a Jedi? And then when that can't happen, and then he takes the turn and you see that turn, it sort of makes sense. And if you didn't have episode 2, yeah, a lot of that wouldn't make sense on why he's so upset that, you know, you can't have both a happy life and be a Jedi. You can't be in love and be a Jedi. But I think it's the same kind of concept. On paper, if you read that story, it would be that middle bit would be so juicy and intriguing. But because we're seeing it on screen, it's I could care less. It's boring and bland. Part of that's direction, but we can get into that at another time. But I think it's the same kind of narrative structure. You see how it gets, you know, you see how it gets action heavy at the beginning and action heavy at the end, and then narratively strong in the middle. It's the same idea as Lord of the Rings. We were action heavy at the beginning and action heavy at the end, and then we get narratively stronger in the middle.
Right.
It's the connection. It's the connective tissue between the beginning and the end. And that's why the middle was so important.
Oh, right. Like I said, they're important elements. And I think it's just, it's easy to, and this is where I think you've got to interweave action and intrigue, because how do I want to say this? Gamers are not known for their extensive attention spans. Let's put it that way. At least most of the ones I know.
Right. No, exactly. As I say, as I'm distracted.
And so if you, and maybe you can speak on this more from a film perspective, but it's like in movies or even, you know, I've seen this in so many music videos, they keep your attention by changing the shot rapidly or more rapidly, where if you have a long extended shot, it kind of lulls you, which, again, that's a tool to use, but that those bursts kind of focus everyone. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Exactly. In film, you can use long visuals for a number of reasons, whether it be to build a ominous set or to build suspense or to build unease. You can use mm-hmm. those long unending shots. And I think the same is kind of true of using intrigue in storytelling. When it comes to tabletop RPGs, if you're using intrigue to build suspense, which is what intrigue is typically associated with, and yeah, they go hand in hand. I wouldn't say necessarily in this context that they're the same thing, because intrigue and suspense can be, you know, something can be suspenseful but not intriguing, right? How do I put this? Watching the numbers being drawn for the lottery is suspenseful, but it's not an intriguing activity, right? Mm-hmm. Unless you've tried to rig the lottery, in which case that is an intriguing activity. And now we have a story,
right?
Because you have an action and you have an intrigue, and you have intrigue building to an end. Because if the lottery doesn't come up the numbers that you rigged it to be, what
happened?
Right. So that's action and intrigue playing off of each other. So again, I think intriguing things don't have to be necessarily, what was the word I was just using? Just fell out of my head. Suspenseful. Just in the same way that intriguing things don't have to be exciting. And they don't have to be boring either. So intrigue is one of those things where it's all situational. It all applies depending on what the situation is at hand. You can start a story with intrigue, but you need to know what tone you're going for. So you use the right type of intrigue to start that off, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going for something weird, creepy, and suspenseful, say you're going Arkham Horror, you're set, or not Arkham Horror, which reminds me, we'll talk about that later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually have some ideas around that, but
I would like to talk to you about that later. But say you're building a Delta Green or Call of Cthulhu game, take a shot. say you're building one of those, you're starting that in an unfamiliar place. You're building that intrigue just by the unfamiliarity of it. Or maybe you're starting it somewhere very familiar for the players, and you're building that intrigue of why, how is this different from reality, which is another way of, you know, playing with things. But yeah, I don't know where I was going with this metaphor.
I don't know, but you've got me thinking in a way, right? So you can start with intrigue like that just by setting it somewhere familiar, but off.
Right.
And that off is what's intriguing.
Correct.
But in my head, what I would then go for is, right as they're getting a handle on something's off, that's when I slam into them with an action scene to kind of throw them off balance, which makes the off that much more off, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, let's talk about another podcast on the network, Unseen World, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, they set that in Vegas because they're from Vegas. Mm-hmm. And they know the area. Let's talk about, what was the, there was the...
Story Told That Followed Giara, which was Exalted.
No.
Which I didn't listen to much of. And they're doing the Promethean thing.
Way back.
You're thinking of the one that changed his name and then with Tyler. It became Tabletop Tales.
Yes.
Oh, dang it. What the hell was that? But yeah, it was set around Boston in a homebrew post-apocalyptic.
Right. Yeah, that was another one where they used home but different. Home but changed.
What comes after?
What comes after. That's what it was called. That was cool. And the idea of using home but different is a good narrative hook. I mean, it is. It works. It only works if you have a group that's from a general area, though.
True, which means it applies better to in-person games than online, generally.
Generally. Like our group, we couldn't do that because nobody has... I don't think we have a location that we've all shared at one point or another.
Not that I can think of.
Strangely,
we all do, though, seem to have some sort of connective area in a way, even loosely.
Well, that's just how it goes when it comes to personalities, in my opinion. When you find people you mesh with, the reason you mesh with them is because they're like you or you're like them in some particular weird way. And I, as much as I really enjoy that group on Monday nights, we are all like each other in some particular way. We all have the same kind of like, oh, you like this, I like this, you like that, well, I like that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we all have some weird thing that brings us always back to, like, as much as Ben doesn't know music, it doesn't matter because his taste and our taste, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But anyways, what was any other thoughts on this? Because we need to...
I'm not sure how we got to that sidetrack.
No, I don't know. We took a connection somewhere.
But yeah, no, I think like action and intrigue are both important things to use. But
I think what we need to do is next week we need to talk about action, because this week we talked about intrigue.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. I think the thing, okay, so here's an intrigue twist that I think a lot of people will be able to identify with. Okay, a lot of people have watched Breaking Bad. Remember mm-hmm. the thing they did all the time in the intros where over all these weird images that mm-hmm. didn't make sense until like 6 to 12 episodes later?
Mm-hmm.
That just made you wonder.
Yeah, what is that? Heck, what?
Even the opening sequence to the whole damn show makes no sense until, what, like the end of season one?
Basically the end of season one. I think it is like, Yeah, I think like that last two episodes is all about that beginning sequence. And yeah, that's a great way to build intrigue because it's like, oh, here's a hook and you're hooked. And
right. And I think, but like, I feel like intrigue, the thing is you can't just keep piling the intrigue on, I don't think, without resolving parts of it. Like if you just keep stacking on more and more unknown, then
you lose.
It just becomes overwhelming.
Your audience loses interest in it. There's a lot of things that I've watched that just kept adding more intrigue, and I just went, I'm done with this. There was something I watched the other day that I just did that with. Dang, I can't remember what it was. There was something, it was like a TV show that I was watching, and I was like, I turned it off because I was done. Like, they kept adding, trying to think. I can't remember what it was. There was a show I was watching the other day that just kept adding more and more and more and more loose ends and never paid anything off. And I just went, okay, that's enough of this. Well,
yeah.
Twin Peaks does that, except they do it in such a weird way that you're invested.
I never watched that.
It's okay. So it is very bizarre. And I think it is worth a watch. But you need to understand that it's very slow and it's very bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the time or interest in watching something that's very slow and very bizarre, don't watch it. It's not worth it. But if you have time and you're interested in something that is just an odd piece of media that is so odd, it's unsettling in a lot of ways, it's definitely worth the watch.
Mm-hmm.
But with all that, any final thoughts?
I mean, okay, yeah, we can table action, I think, because I think there are points to bring up around action, you know, that we touched on, but that need further expanded. Right. No, I mean, I think I think they're two vital components, but I think you can have intrigue without action, but I don't know that action without intrigue works. So maybe it makes sense that we started with intrigue mostly.
Yeah. And so what I think we'll do is we'll pick up with action next week. And so we both have time to think about cases of action really without intrigue.
Fair.
Or your case against it. So I'll think more on the side of action without intrigue. And you go ahead and think of more along the lines of your case against it. And we'll come back at each other and see what we come out with at the end.
We're plotting against each other.
Well, I just mean more of a juxtaposition type of conversation.
Oh, no, I get what you're saying.
But with all that being said, let's go ahead and move into Game of the Week.
Woohoo! Game of the Week!
Game of the Week! Game of the Week!
So I'll go first, as I typically do.
All right.
I have one that is not so much a game, more so an add-on from somewhere unexpected.
Okay.
I have an adventure called The Lost Universe.
Ah, I've seen some stuff about this.
So this is from the National Aeronautics and Space National Aeronautics and Space Administration. So they put out a little adventure. Dark mystery has settled over the city of Aldestron on the rogue planet of Exilaris. Researchers dedicated to studying the cosmos have disappeared, and the Hubble Space Telescope has vanished from Earth's timeline. Only an ambitious crew of adventurers can uncover what was lost. Are you up to the challenge? And it's designed for a party of 4 to 7, level 7 to 10 characters. And it's just a little cool adventure from NASA, of all people.
Yeah. Like, no, I think I saw Keith Kappel posted this, I think, on my Facebook feed.
Yeah. And you know what? It's so freaking cool. Like, and I'm a big fan of tabletop RPGs that teach people things. And that's almost exactly what this is. This is trying to teach people about space. And I'm down for a tabletop RPG to teach me about space. As a matter of fact, I got some space coming up in like my D&D game that this would slot right into almost amazingly.
Well, there you go.
But yeah, it's a wild little thing that is system agnostic. You can put it into any system. They suggest, you know, a level-based system that sort of rhymes with, you know,
has
bread and butter.
In it?
Yeah, it has an ampersand. But you could use it in anything. We could throw this in Genesis. This would work great in Genesis. You do it in Stars Without Number. You could do it in, I don't know, throw a dart at the dartboard. Play it in that. And I think it's a cool thing. I genuinely do. The more I look at this, the more I get excited about it. And like, yeah, just something really neat.
Well, that's cool. That's really cool. Yeah, I had seen it, but I hadn't really looked into it. So yours is of the Lost Universe.
Correct. And I sent it to you in the green room.
Yeah, I saw that.
And also the book has really amazing pictures of like space.
So I found something that, well, I'm not sure how new it is. Let me look here. Okay. Well, it was added to the drive-through catalog on February 20th of 2024. So it's,
about a week-ish old. Yeah.
It's
I did look at this.
New setting from Monte Cook Games. What it's designed for the Cypher system, but it's called Rust and Redemption. And look, I mean, it's Monte Cook, so the imagery is just great. Nuts. But it's post-apocalyptic, but like in that like overgrown, creepy, but like it feels like it's also got like the classic, you know, Mad Max dusty wasteland and just weird stuff. Like if you look at the art on the page, the drive-through listing page, there's lots of really weird crap going on.
You know, I love me some really, really weird crap. But yeah, I looked at this. I didn't. The only reason I didn't pick it is because I had already picked that I was going to shout out that NASA game, and you know, from Monte Cook, so you know it's going to be quality and it's Cypher system. So say what you will. I know it's kind of divisive, but
yeah. Well, I own a game in Cypher system. I haven't read it yet, but
I don't own any yet. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to by the end of everything.
But look, I mean, this is a setting book. You do need the Cypher System Core rulebook to play it. So, and, you know, obviously any statistical material that's presented is for that. But I feel like it's a setting book.
You could take the setting
and use it for what the hell ever you want.
Right?
You know, like you could take this and apply it to Apocthulu.
You could apply it to like, I don't know.
Mutant Year Zero.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say a Year Zero engine game, and then I couldn't think of Year Zero. Anything would really work with this. It's cool, though. And
yeah,
that's the one thing that Monte Cook does really especially well, is just phenomenal settings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what are the... Okay, at least on drive-thru, it's only available in PDF, and it's...
all of $18.99.
Yeah. But yeah, and the name is just cool. Rust and Redemption. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a very cool thing.
You could probably actually tie this into Salvage for Genesis, too.
Probably. Probably a number of things you could tie this into.
I think I may have convinced myself to buy yet another thing that I don't have time to read. Oh, my. But yeah, like I, the artwork has me hooked. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah. No, definitely. It's a cool game. So yeah, that was Rust and Redemption. And with all that being said, links to everything are in the show notes. Discord, Patreon. If you can't support us on Patreon or don't choose to, that's fine. Come at least join us on Discord. Always cool conversations and good people happening over on the Discord.
Mm-hmm.
And keep an eye out for us at Gamer Nation Con. You can find the link to that in the description as well, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. I'll try and remember to put it. I don't know if I've been putting it in every week, but I'll try and make sure I do this week. I know I have some.
We should at the very least try and put it in until right up before the con.
Yeah, it's just one of those things I don't always remember to do.
I get you. And we want to thank everyone for listening and be kind to one another. Remind you to get out there and play some RPGs and be kind to one another.
Yep. Take care, y'all.
intro and outro music by the band 12 Noon. You can email us at meandsteverpg@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at andrpgs. Find us on Facebook at Me and Steve RPG Podcast, on Discord at Me and Steve RPGs. And as always, all of these links are in the show notes. Thank you, and be kind to one another.
How much for the cigar?
Cigar, $20, dog. You got to go down the street to the store and buy that.